Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline. Tim, what's going on behind the Eagle curtain?
Well, it's funny, Mike, because the NFL draft is kind of creeping up on us, I feel like, this year with everything that's going on with the Sixers and the Flyers and the extended season, of course, that the Eagles gave everybody into February. It's like, all right, all of a sudden it's around the corner and it's time to focus in. So right now they're just going through the process of getting the official visits in. You know, they have 30 of those that they're able to do and kind of putting on the final touches of their evaluations before they get to the draft, which is just a couple weeks away now.
All right, so where do you think they're targeting? They just did sign a tight end, which probably means they're not going to draft a tight end with the first round draft pick. Are they in the market to trade to add more draft picks? What do you think their strategy is going to be?
Well, I think the fact that they're sitting at 32 gives them options, and of course it's difficult to handicap precisely what a team is going to do at the very end of the first round, given that there's a whole allotment of picks that'll go on before that will help dictate what their move is. But there's a working theory that makes a lot of sense to me, and that is the idea of moving back and then potentially moving back in order to take a running back. And the logic behind that is this. The Eagles have a league low 6 picks heading into the draft. Howie Roseman is on record saying that, especially with Carson Wentz's contract becoming due pretty soon and the fact that they have so many veterans at big numbers on this roster, that they're going to have to infuse young talent onto it via the draft over the next couple of years. They're without a number 2 and a number 3 currently in this upcoming draft. And so it makes sense to me for them to, if assuming that they don't have this prospect that's just, you know, like red lights blasting at them, got to take him, he's on the board, how the hell did he fall to us at 32? Mm-hmm. Assuming that the rest of the prospects are kind of all in the same cluster, I think it makes sense for them to move back into the top of the second round. That way they add an additional pick or two, and they still get the choice of some guys that'll be sitting there in that group. And I think that's a prime position in order to take a running back. If you look at the majority of the mock drafts, they have this kind of a cluster of running backs that could include, depending on whether some of them get snaked in the first round or not, but Darius Geis, Ronald Jones, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb. There's this group of quality running backs that could be sitting there. Add in the fact that the Eagles, you know, went pretty hard after Dalvin Cook last year, but missed out on him. Minnesota ended up leapfrogging them, but he was definitely somebody that was in their sights. That tells you that they're open to taking a running back that high. So I think if you add up those parts, plus the fact that, do they know about Jay Ajayi long-term because of the knee concerns? I think it makes sense for them to pull the trigger on a running back potentially after trading out of that first round.
All right, let me just, on that note, right now they got Ajayi, Clement, and they're interested in bringing back Sproles. Does that mean that they're recruiting over Smallwood and Pumphrey and they're no longer involved in what they want to do?
I think that it's fair to say with Smallwood. I mean, he seems to be a long shot to suddenly come into the picture as a big contributor for them. It's possible, but I would rate that as a long shot. Pumphrey was really on the fringe, I think, of the 53-man roster when it was being formulated at the end of training camp. They ended up keeping him on in large part, I think, because they invested on him. You know, they're a fourth-round pick, and then they put him on IR with a hamstring injury. There's a chance that he comes back and contributes, but I don't think that that's any sort of guarantee. So you know, they like, obviously, what they saw with Clement, but even if you do bring back Darren Sproles, that's obviously short-term. That's going to be a one-year thing. Ajayi, maybe you get a year or two out of him. Maybe it even extends beyond that, but I think that there's some legitimate concerns about how far of a career he can have. And they're in a position where, you know, they're not really needy at any spot. In other words, you know, if running back is the position that makes the most sense, they can do that because they've built the roster to this point very well.
All right, what about the wide receiver position? They've officially worked out a few wide receivers. Is that going to be an early target for them?
I think it could be. I mean, now this all goes into what's available for them when they do get on the clock, whether that is at 32 or early in the second round. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if they end up targeting an offensive skill position player, you know, with that 32 pick or early in the second round. And some of that is because of just the way that it's going to fall. And so if You know, if for an example, you have Dallas Goedert there for the tight ends, or Hayden Hurst. Okay, those two might make some sense if they want to go in that direction. And then I also think that there is a cluster of wide receivers that they could potentially target that would be in that mix as well. So I think, yeah, Mike, it's possible. You know, they have some decent talent wide receiver, but if somehow you have Courtland Sutton, if he, you know, is in their range in the second round, if they were to go back, a guy like DJ Moore, I mean, those are some wide receivers that would probably be within that range.
Where in the world is Wentz? Now, where in the world is Waldo? Where in the world is Wentz right now?
He's been spending most of his time in the Philadelphia area.
Okay. So he's here. He's working out. He's is he throwing more? Is he posting any more videos? Well, what's the status of the knee right now in your view?
I'm putting together actually a piece for ESPN that's going to land probably in the next like 2 days about what's reasonable to expect for Carson Wentz. You know, once he gets on the field and when you can expect him sort of to get on the field. And some of that will be dependent on how the rehab goes over the course of the next couple months here. But he has been, you know, very much in the rehab process and going hard at it. I think that the conclusion that I came to through doing some research for this upcoming piece is that while it's certainly possible that he ends up there in week one, it's not a guarantee yet. And once once he does get on the field, it doesn't mean that he's going to be the Carson Wentz that people are used to seeing. And there's an expert opinion or two out there that, you know, he won't look like people are used to seeing him until potentially midseason or beyond. You know, so that's kind of an interesting dynamic. But I think that because we're so far out, Mike, it's hard to say definitively exactly when he's going to be back or what he's going to look like. But I think the fact that he has, you know, two ligament injuries that he's coming back from, it's not just a clean ACL tear, he also has the LCL, you know, that can complicate things to the fact of if anybody's expecting this Adrian Peterson sudden recovery out of nowhere, that's just not the injury that he's been dealing with. It's not the hand that he's been dealt. And, you know, he still has a lot of parts of the rigorous rehab left in front of him.
All right, last question. You look at this team on paper, as they are right now, before they add any more people, are they better on paper than they were last year to start the season?
I think that along the defensive line, you can argue that for sure. But on, you know, on the flip side, and in cornerback, you lose Patrick Robinson, who is a pretty key piece. So I would say, I would probably put it like an even split right now. But one thing I think that the 2017 season taught us is that it goes beyond personnel. You know, people who were projecting this team, most of us had them, you know, 9 wins. And certainly when Nick Foles went in for Carson Wentz, few predicted that they would go on this very long run. And one of the key reasons that they did was because of the chemistry. I mean, it was undeniable. It picked up as the season went along. It was really clear that they were playing for the coach, that they were playing for each other, that they held one another accountable. And I've been in, like, you know, a bunch of locker rooms over the years, and it's really hard to say which one is going to gel and which one isn't. When it's there, when the chemistry is there, it is just so glaringly obvious. And when it's not, the same thing. They have some different additions, some guys that have left the building. A lot of the guys that left the building were considered key locker room guys, key character guys. So on paper, I think you can make the argument. But the biggest thing is, and I think the biggest lesson to be learned from 2017 is, you know, you got to see how the whole thing gels together and how the 53 men kind of play off of one another before you can make any kind of declaration that this is a better team than the one that just hoisted the Lombardi.
All right. Sounds good. Tim, always a pleasure. Keep digging it out, brother.
All right, brother. Will do.